Depending on conditions in occupied North America, the Anglo Indian may or may not employ harsh language.
International news, thought and opinion from the people on the front lines of indigenous struggle. This is Intelligence Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Dean here on the ferry to Sapelo Island in March has been behind an effort to reclaim lands on the island for the Geechee Gullah people from the state of Georgia. This is what he told WJCL.
Those lands have since been taken away illegally by the state of Georgia, by private developers, hijacking tax bills.
Paul believes his activism and politics played a role in his arrest.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land!
Indian land!
Indian land!
Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know? Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for the smart of the original.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Inteligente de Indigena.
This nation was founded by men of many nations and backgrounds. It was founded on the principle that all men are created equal, and that the rights of every man are diminished when the rights of one man are threatened. My fellow Americans, this is a problem which faces us all, in every city of the North as well as the South. Today, there are Negroes unemployed two or three times as many compared to whites. Inadequate education, moving into the large cities, unable to find work, denied an equal right. We cannot say to 10% of the population that you can't have that right. Your children can't have the chance to develop whatever talents they have. That the only way that they're going to get their rights is to go in the street and demonstrate. I think we owe them and we owe ourselves a better country than that.
Internet radio for smarter than original.
Welcome along, transmitting to the people of the fourth world from within occupied North America. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, the Angry Indian, editor-in-chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the fourth world from and-newswire.blogspot.com. And you are tuned in to Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and all the communities across the world living under imperial, theological, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, and neo-fascist control. I wish you all welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, welcome along. Shout out to the gods and earths, and peace to the original family at this time of strife and struggle. You know, it is what it is, isn't it? It is what it is. It's been a hell of a time in the news. It is what it is. It's been a hell of a time in the news. You know, Gil Noble passes. And, you know, frankly, there's absolutely no one to fill his shoes. You know, let's develop Middleton. He's been gone for some time. Again, there's no one to fill their shoes. Now, you have a lot of buffoons that want to jump up on the mic. You know, you can make your judgment. You know, I leave it up to you, brother and sister, what you think about this show, you know, and how it's been run over the years. But, you know, the bottom line is it's real. It's me. This is what you get. You know, I'm a black Indian in the Americas. This is what you get, you know, and I'm aware. I'm conscious. You know, I understand that when I go into a convenience store and I see African Pride, that's the name of the brand, African Pride hair relaxer, you know, that there's a problem here. Now, you know, there are white folks that will take offense to what I just said. And, you know, really, that's their problem. You know, because if you follow me on Twitter, The Angry Indian, on Twitter, you know, you'll see some of the ridiculous, and I don't argue with people. You know, I just ask them clear questions. You know, like when it comes to the Ron Paul thing, is he a Nazi? Is he a racist? You know, does he have a problem with black people? Obviously, he does. You know, because the only defense that they can bring up for him, you know, other than the usual nonsense about he didn't write them. Well, even if Lou Rockwell wrote them, the fact that he even had Lou Rockwell on his payroll already is shady. The fact that he published anything Lou Rockwell would write is shady. So, you know, it doesn't really matter. It's shady no matter how you look at it. No matter how you look at it. But, you know, the bottom line is this is somebody that's running for president of the United States. And he will not take responsibility for a news publication that he that is called or was called, because I actually read these when they were published, because, you know, if you were part of any you know, organization, movement, if you did any sort of research in anti-fascist you know, activism, I guess, you know trying to keep yourself aware, you know, reading Searchlight, you know, you'll see the publications. You see things from the Klan. You'll see things from the American Nazi Party. You see things from the Separatists, the World Church, the Creator. And the Ron Paul newsletter was part of that. Now, I've already written about this. It's out there already. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, Ron Paul is taking pictures with people like Don Black from Stormfront. You know, he refuses to give back money that they've donated to his campaign. And like I said, he's publishing, again, don't believe me. I've written about this, and all you need to do is do a search. And, you know, you will find, you know, I mean, you know, the thing that kills me about all of this is that if that had been, say, the Nation of Islam, who had published material about how to do harm to people, you would think that, you know, that there would be scorn at least. You know, you know, generally there would be an investigation, wouldn't there, about something like that, because that is promoting racial hatred. Now, you know, again, that's a touchy subject, and it has nothing to do with political correctness, you know, which again is a misnomer. You know, not having the right to call people chinks or kikes or niggas, you know, or Japs. Or calling our South Asian brothers and sisters monkeys. You know, that you know, not having the social right to do that somehow limits free speech. Now, it's one thing if you're using, you know, these terms in an artistic sense, in a literary sense. I fully believe in poetic license. But, you know, there's a, like, for example, I'm not pulling him out. You know, I'm not trying to say, well, this particular person is the worst. But mind the mentee. Now, you know, I admit I do not watch television. But, you know, when I visit people, they tend to have these new flat screen TVs. And they have a 100 and some odd channels on their, we used to call them clickers back in the old days. But the remotes. I don't know, did they even call television anymore? You know, because I mean, I still say tape, you know, when it's file, right? It's just habit, you know, but you know, when we look at all of this, and we're supposed to be an advanced society now, and, you know, I'm watching Mind of Mencia, and I'm hearing insults. Racial insults. And my host was saying, yeah, well, he's Mexican, and he cracks up on Mexican too. And it's like, so what? You know, this isn't Don Rickles and, Don Rickles, Bell Barth, Richard Pryor, what have you. You know, that was a particular time. And they were addressing a real bias. And for those of you who are not old enough, and, you know, and that's a problem, because when you're dealing with 20-somethings today, you know, the world didn't begin until they were born. And, you know, it's an American disease, and it's been spread everywhere. The United States has placed its brand of capitalist culture that, you know, the youth matter. We're really not even the youth matter, that I matter. And, you know, and there's still so many people, so many, you know, of the older generation who still, you know, it really amazes me. They still believe that, you know, they believe this, that the hippies, you know, I'm talking about the real hippies, not the middle class kids that went to Woodstock. I'm talking about the real hippies, the real counterculture, that, you know, the whole thing about me, myself, and I was their product and their contribution to the decline of Western society. And, you know, he never would accept, because he believed everything Eric Severide and you know, Howard K. Smith and all those cats had to say, you know, and the late Mike Wallace, you know, I mean, Gil Noble, Mike Wallace, I mean, you know, this is something. But, and, you know, Mike Wallace, hard-hitting news journalist, right? Was the host and producer, I assume, because it was his show, of the hate produced. Now, you can find it on the internet. It's, I believe it's, you know, well, it's 49 Standards Public Domain, right? And the reason I said it like that is because they're pulling things out of the public domain. I just learned that Metropolis, Fritz Lang's, breakdown of, you know, capitalist and class-based society, you know, malfeasance. Everybody talks about, you know, Maria the robot. You know, yeah, that's true. But the whole point of the proletariat versus those who live above, that's real, my friend. And here it is, capitalism, of all things. Capitalism has waited after... this thing has been in the public domain for how many years? All of a sudden now, somebody has sold it to somebody else. They had the rights to it. How the hell is that possible? How the hell is that possible? There was a reason why things were put into the public domain. The whole point of the public domain was it has no financial, has no monetary use anymore. But since capitalism, as a Maori sister explained some years back at a conference, she said, you know, the European is the type of creature that would eat his own mother. And this is what we're seeing in terms of capitalism, brothers and sisters. Now, I know, flow with me. I know I'm not going where we thought we were going. But, you know, roll with me here, because, you know, I had a script. You know, the hell with it, right? Look here. You know, on my way in here today, you know, somebody wanted to talk about Fukushima on the bus. And we're standing under the surveillance camera on the bus, you know, shooting the breeze. And he's telling me, and I found this out later on before, you know, we actually started recording here, that the, now I already knew that most of the West Coast you know, British Columbia all the way down to Baja California here has been irradiated. We've been radiated, right? They've checked the grass in BC over here, and whatever these, you know, these measurements are, because I know nothing about this. This is not my forte. All I know is that, you know, my wife and I are now wondering what the hell our health situation is going to be like, because they're telling us that we've all been hit by this radiation from Fukushima. And I don't know why, for some reason, you know, someone else who got into the conversation, you know, on the bus, you know, she was saying that, well, what about the people in, you know, in Tokyo and what have you? And she goes, they're not ill. And it's like, you know, as the gentleman I was speaking with, he said, well, they're not ill yet. You know, I mean, they're still talking about, you know, Japan basically being unlivable. You know, I mean, forever, basically. I mean, for the foreseeable goddamn future. You know, kind of like Chernobyl. You know, and I've spoken to a journalist who visited Chernobyl. I don't know, this was some time back, several years ago. And she was just telling me how, you know, how this, like, still everything is over there. And how, you know, the people who lived there. And she said this was the most amazing thing, was that people still live there. And that when you go into the homes, they'll actually have, like on their sofas, they'll have a, on, you know, their lounge chairs and what have you, that they'll have patches of material, you know, removed, patches of clothing removed, because they have to, you know, check with these radiation things all the time, and it shows some kind of whatever, you know, and they cut it out and get rid of it, you know. And she was telling me that they live like this. Now, you know, we were talking here, you know, a moment ago, at least I was getting somewhere, right? I was going somewhere about how things, you know, how, you know, karma is a bitch. So now we're all irradiated over here. The milk has been tested in various news services on both coasts as having, you know, higher than usual, which kind of makes you wonder when they say usual. You say, what the hell does that mean, usual? You know, what is usual? How much radiation is usual? And of course, it, you know, it turns out that they radiate the food before you get it. You know, and all of you suckers who go to McDonald's and Starbucks and what have you, I mean, or shop at, I don't know, you know, you got this chain everything in the U.S. and Canada now, right? So, you know, well, Mexico for that matter too, you know, and we really need to start talking in terms of, you know, North America, because really, that, you know, how much difference is it, you know, other than some slight skin tones as you move further south? Well, actually, when you go to the, you know, to the high north and the high south, it's actually pretty brown, isn't it? But see, nobody wants to discuss that, right? Nobody wants to discuss that because, you know, global warming that supposedly doesn't exist has just opened up all of these new pathways up in Nunavut. And, you know, now all of a sudden they're telling the people of Nunavut that that's not their territory. They just made a deal, and now they're saying, oh, it's not your territory because, you know, the Dutch and Danish or what have you, you know, they, you know, in the U.S., they all want to go through now, and you know what's going to happen to their seals, because that's what they live off, right? They live off the seals. They live off the sea. These are people of the sea. Same thing with our brothers and sisters in the Aleutian Islands. They live off of the sea, but the sisters up there are giving birth to children with deformities. And when they lactate, it turns out that their milk is full of PCBs. But, you know, let's not let the facts get in the way. Let's not let the facts get in the way that the indigenous man and woman across this planet is dying because of capitalism. You know, because you keep hearing about how capitalism brings good things to life. But, you know, damn near the entire world is capitalist, outside of a few spots like Cuba or Venezuela, which still practice capitalism, which you know you can actually do in communism. No one ever says you can't make a profit. The problem is, how do you make the profit? what do? You decide to, you know, monopolize a province, a state, a municipality, you know, between a, you know, either an individual, you know, sole ownership or a small conglomerate. You know, I mean, this is exactly what Thomas Jefferson was, you know, arguing against. But you'll never be able to explain that to these Tea Party conservative NRA clusterfucks who think that a draft dodger like Ted Nugent and another draft dodger like Dick Cheney and another draft dodger like George W. Bush. You know, George Herbert Walker Bush served in World War II. His son did not serve in Vietnam. He is Vietnam age, and he did not go. Why? Now, it's one thing if he was against the war, but he, you know, he wasn't. Obviously, he was for it, right? You know, like Cheney, he's for war. He won't fight it. He won't allow his children to go, but he will send your children to go. Those who do not do it are always willing to send others to do their dirty work. Always. And there's always a low-life thug out there that will accept the job. You know, I hate to say this, but let's look at Africa. You know, why is Africa in the state it is? It had its anti-colonial period. It had its anti-colonial revolution, right? And what do we see now under, you know, this African president in the United States? You know, we're seeing the recolonialism of Africa. This is the third rape of Africa. I said this more than 3 years ago that this was coming. And then when all of a sudden, you know, New Hampshire happened here and Ohio. What I'm talking about is, you know, this last election, you know, everybody expected Hillary Clinton to win. She was supposed to win. That was the plan. Even Rupert Murdoch gave her money. And, you know, you didn't hear any Republicans saying anything about that. Fox News didn't say a goddamn word about it, right? About the hypocrisy of Rupert Murdoch contributing a fair amount of money, a fair amount of funds to the campaign of Hillary Clinton. But, you know, she started to overplay her hand, and Sinbad and Sheryl Crow, who were with her in Bosnia, apparently didn't have the same experience that she did. You know, the one that she told everybody over here. And, you know, that really hurt her. And then she had a crocodile tear episode, and that didn't do too much good for her. And then she truly showed her, you know, liberal, Republican, conservative roots. When she was talking to, I think it was the American chat show host. I mean, Housewife's Choice. It is what it is. Barbara Walters, right? You know, in one of her lauded interviews, I believe it was with her, she's speaking to Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton said, thank God for us rich people. So, you know, I mean, she didn't sound, you know, any better at that point than, you know, any of the Bushes. And you know what I'm talking about with that, you know, after Katrina, you know, the idea that this is the best they've ever had over here in the Texas dome, or whatever that thing was in Texas where they were putting those people until they decided where they were going to tell them to leave, you know, to just leave off, just go away, find something else. You know, same thing with Laura Bush. Didn't she say it was more important for them to go to school than to have a home? You know, to know where their fathers were. And what am I talking about with that? You know, a lot of black men disappeared in Katrina. It's a rumor. You know, I saw one written blog post, I believe it was, sometime back. You know, I really can't remember the source. But, you know, there's always been that rumor in the black community that there's been, you know, black men that were supposedly separated from their families and were never seen after that. You know, I mean, I don't see why we should at least discuss these sort of things. You know, I mean, there's something that's utterly ridiculous. Like, Suge Knight, I don't know where this is coming from. He's saying now that Tupac is still alive. And he's saying this now, or that he thinks he's still alive. And he's saying this now,
when they got a hologram of him and Nate Dogg, who just passed away? You know, I mean, have you ever seen THX 1138? I mean, goddamn, man, you know, Future Shock? I mean, for real. You know, it's like what? Children of Men. All these infertile women. Fascism in the UK, right? I mean, how many science fiction films can we point to of where things are just completely goddamn wrong, beginning with the granddaddy of them all, 1984. Now, you know, there's a BBC version of that we've hosted at our old site, and we actually should put up at some point on one of our mirror sites. It's a BBC version of 1984, starring the late Peter Cushing. I believe Sir Peter Cushing, actually. I can't remember who else starred in it. You know, I mean, look, there's free audiobooks out there. You can get free copies. And you do have to consider that it depends on the public domain issues and concerns and the countries that you're in. So please check the permissions. In Australia, what have you, and New Zealand, it might be possible to legally download a copy of 1984 from, say, Project Gutenberg, whereas it would not be legal in Canada. You know, so, yeah, I don't know. It's getting extremely goddamn weird because those with money want every fucking penny. They don't want to leave you and I a goddamn thing. They don't want to pay any taxes. And you know I'm telling the truth because Paul Ryan just recently came up with some nonsense about why are we not talking about raising taxes on the poor. Is he fucking insane? But no, he isn't. He's just another selfish, tiny arugula, scared-ass conservative, you know, who believes that only a small group of people, them, basically, or, you know, those who are lucky enough to get into this clusterfuck of ne'er-do-wells, and that's what it is. It's a group of people who basically hadn't had to struggle for anything, goddamn, you know, most of their lives. You know, they feel that they had, you know, because they had a summer job or something, slinging sausage somewhere, slinging burgers someplace, that, you know, that equates with somebody who gets up every goddamn day at 4:30 in the morning and doesn't see his children until nighttime because he's working double shifts and his wife is working a shift and they have no clue to what the hell is going on with their children because they have to work and they have to pay their bills. Because what's happening to people in the U.S. now when they can't pay their bills? And here you got the, you know, privatized incarceration. And there is article after article after article and report after report after report. Human Rights Watch is on this. Amnesty International is on this. The United Nations is looking at this. These privatized prisons, they are making the argument that, you know, well, if the crime goes down, you know, basically meaning if you drop the current drug laws, which is the only reason the majority of people are in there any goddamn way. If you drop the current drug laws, that they will be out of business. Boo fucking who? You know, making a goddamn profit off of slavery is a motherfucker, isn't it, in the 21st century? See, this is what I'm talking about and why I go on tangents. Because, you know, you open one door, it leads to other pathways where you just realize, like, how many goddamn times we've been lied to about every goddamn thing. How the hell can you have the United States, right, who is supposed to be the leader of freedom, and this is the reason why so many people are being, you know, this, you know, split up into red mist, you know, by these unmanned drones, you know, led by, you know, piloted by a gamer some goddamn place. Because that's what it is, ladies and gentlemen. These people, everybody in the United States believes that life is what they see in the fucking movies. And it's not just me. The historians are saying, and they've been saying this since Bush was in, that the United States is really in a lot of trouble when it comes to intellectual solidity. People here have no sense of history. They have no sense of what America really is because they don't know anything about the goddamn country. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, and conservative lurkers, are you proud of the fact that, you know, students in Oklahoma, in the heartland, goddammit, don't know who the first president of the United States was? Are you proud of this? And now you have Republicans that want to take the history of slavery, which they don't really talk about any goddamn way, against Africans, completely out of the historical references. Completely. That you will have future generations of American students, regardless of ethnicity and original nationality, that will not know that African people were slaves in the United States. And when they talked about this, they said that they were trying to do us, meaning black folk, a favor. They weren't doing it to cover their ass. They were doing it to help us deal. That is exactly what they said. Then you had, you know, the biggest fool that ever ran for president. And I'm serious about this. You know, Palin. Because she wasn't serious any goddamn way. You know, she wasn't serious. You know, I mean, she wasn't serious when she was governor. So, you know, what are we supposed to assume that she was serious when she was running for president? You know, I have a hard time with somebody who attends separatist meetings, you know, in the U.S. South, where they're flying Confederate flags, which I still do not understand why that is okay. They launch a rebellion against this government, and they're allowed to fly their flags, the supporters, the sympathizers of the rebels, of the Confederate rebels. They are allowed to still fly their flag. The Daughters of the American Revolution, that's one of their symbols. I believe they have a patent on it. They fly that flag in the South. They fly it up here in the North, you know, East, West, and South. To make a point, you know, that is the American equivalent of the German Nazi government flag in this country. But you notice it is illegal to fly a German Nazi government flag in Germany. It is illegal, but it is perfectly legal and it is accepted and promoted to fly a Confederate flag in the United States. Now let that trickle down for a moment. And then think about what I just said about how, you know, there's a lot of serious karma coming down. Serious karma coming down. Now, here you have Fukushima, which I didn't know because, you know, I mean, evidently, you know, America leads the world in everything, right? So, and that includes nuclear reactors. So it turns out that TEPCO, you know, all this time, I thought the government was in control of things. Well, it turns out not. It was a private enterprise, right? And they got, you know, some kind of deal with the company that built it, which I believe was the United States, you know, owned over there, run by TEPCO. Okay. So here you have the end, or the official end, of World War II, when the Enola Gay swoops down on a group of farmers in Nagasaki and Hiroshima, you know, totally lays out these two communities to have absolutely nothing to do with their fascist government. And as President Harry S. Truman said afterwards, it was a great experiment, or it was a grand experiment. I don't give a damn. You know what I'm trying to get to. The point was, they already knew that the war was over. They did not need to do that. But they were not Europeans. Well, they were not the Europeans anyway that they gave a damn about at that particular time. I mean, you know, we can look at Dresden, which was pretty bad. Dresden was pretty bad. You know, and then you can even throw in Guernica if you want to be, you know, want to be fair. You know, but what's happening now right here with this drone warfare? Now you got drones here, drones there, drones over your mama's house, you know. I mean, drones all over the universities. Drone. Drones are coming down. Now, Iran has one. So guess what? If they have it, and they're able to figure out and reverse engineer this thing, which I understand this is being reported that has happened, that this has occurred. So that means then they have the same capability to do what the United States has been doing. So nobody's safe. You know, here it is, you got Martin Luther King, who tells everybody that violence begets violence, right? And the Jesus that these crackpot, weird-ass, funny-looking, you know, Christian maniacs who are causing way more havoc in Africa than even I anticipated. I mean, this whole anti-gay thing over there. You know, first they went after our traditional people, our healers, our root people. You know, which, you know, really, you know, I mean, the pan term for that is the same as it is in Spanish, in Mexican Spanish. You know, you have, you know, curanderos, right? Which is, you know, particular to the Catholicism that is practiced by indigenous people in Mexico. But the brujo, that is a West African term, and it is a broad term. And the brujos, the brujería, you know, the Vodun priests and priestesses and our people who practice the original ways given to us by the Creator in the original land. I mean, you know, the violence against them has been going on for about 10, 12 years. You know, CBS News has reported on this. You know, it's not a big secret. It's just nobody gave a damn, right? You know, because they're just niggas, right? So, you know, who cares? And, you know, now it's the gay thing. And then you have these evangelicals here who are teaching this sort of hate because they're over there, you know, even evangelizing and getting these people to drop their traditional beliefs. And I'm not talking about Islam, what have you, because now that's a problem. And that was never really a problem before. Not in Africa. Religion was never a problem in Africa. In India, you had before, you know, the Europeans came in. Christians, right? Farsi, Hindu, you know, the variety of Hindu, which, you know, we can talk about Hinduism and how crummy it is. And you know, and if you're a Hindu, you know, and if you take offense to that, I'm sorry, but you have an underclass. You know, you can't tell me that you're Hindu and you're not observing the untouchables. Because Gandhi certainly said that the untouchables need to stay exactly where they are, untouchable. And we know who makes up the bulk ethnically of the untouchable class, of which the Buddha, you know, if you who depend on who you want to believe, right, who wasn't really from India but from Nepal, depends on where you want to, you know, make a border, right? Depends on where you want to draw a line on a map. But the bottom line is he was supposed to be a Dravidian. Dravidians, for the most part, in India proper, under Hinduism, on the bottom of the list. Who's at the top? All you have to do is look at Bollywood and you get my drip. Matter of fact, you can look at Telemundo, you know, I mean, all of them. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. The only reason you see, you know, brown and Asian faces on a, you know, American and Canadian media is because how does it look to not have it? You know, they got to brainwash them too. You know, it just can't brainwash white folks. You know, see, we, when I talk about Howard K. Smith and what have you earlier, and Eric Severide, you know, I mean, people I respect, you know, I'm not talking about Walter Winchell and you know, and you know, folks like that, because, you know, he started all of this, you know, what Fox is, Walter Winchell was, you know, and he could make or break your career because it wasn't that he said anything of any meaning. It was how he said it. You know, he had a really rapid, you know, staccato style, and, you know, he had that teletype, and, you know, I actually, to be honest with you, I tried to duplicate it, you know, on this show for fun, and it was really hard. It was uniquely his, but, you know, same thing with Hannity. If Hannity didn't talk nonsense, if Bill O'Reilly didn't walk around like a bully, you know, on that network anyway, because intellectually he's nowhere. You know, I mean, all of these people, wasn't for the fact that it's a freak show over there at Fox. Do you really think anybody will watch? You know, I mean, Glenn Beck has lost it on his radio show. He's lost it on his studio. You know, people watch because they want to see what the hell is going to happen next. I mean, we all know that he's the 2 minutes of hate. And really, we just have hate all the time here in American media. But the bottom line is, people watch this because it's entertaining. It's not news. They don't even think to ask for news anymore. You know, how many people watch Democracy Now? How many people read The Economist? Even though it was conservative, I'm just saying, how many people read that? Their readership is not what you think it would be. You know, the New York Times, there's not that many people to read that. The London Times, there's not that many people to read these papers. You know, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times are the papers that everybody reads. Right? And the Jerusalem Post. Right? You know. I mean, you The Economist, you know, as well. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, there's a limited number of people who are, you know, important, what have you, who are really sitting down and reading all of these papers. You know, Dr. Castro in Cuba, Thai Presidente in Cuba, I mean, he reads from 450 to 750 newspapers a day. You know, I go through about 250, 300. And, you know, of course, this is because of RSS feeds and the new technology. Because, you know, when I first started doing this, there was no blogging software. You had to build your own sites and you had to update that information manually. And, you know, even after all of that, I still don't know what I'm doing, you know. Oh, and now that I'm saying that, I want to give a thanks to Avram Montag. He's been helping us over here with our, with the face of what's happening with the Aboriginal Press News Service. I'd like to thank him for designing La Moderno y Poco, which is my new site. You can find that at Aboriginal Press Notes at posterius.com. You'll find my editorials there. I mean, we got a couple of things going on over here. I mean, we got a new magazine that's been out for a little while. You need to check out at Aboriginal Press News at tumblr.com. You need to check us out at a regular newswire at ang-newswire.blogspot.com, the original site that still gets censored. We got hit the other day. You know, it turns out that there's a case with the U.S. Border Patrol where someone, you know, again, died after encountering them. And this was like 2, maybe 3 years ago. But it turns out that PBS came into possession of some privately filmed video. I believe it was from an iPhone. And caught not only him being tasered and beat by more than a dozen of these officers, but he was begging for his life. He was begging for his life. So you tell me, brother and sister, ladies and gentlemen, and conservative lurker, is this the type of country that you want? Because this isn't what the hell my father served in the military for. You know, I mean, he made it clear to me. He told me this. He said, I went into the military so I could earn you your rights, so that nobody could tell you that you weren't an American and you didn't have the same rights as anyone else. You know, I mean, a lot of people are really under a misapprehension or misunderstanding, I should say, when it comes to trying to understand me or trying to figure out what the hell is going on with me. I was raised by conservatives. They voted Democratic. But everything else about them was conservative. I was raised Catholic. You know, for people who think I was raised by a pack of, you know, like I'm a red diaper. No. No. Not at all. Not at all. You know, I'm not going to say I was raised by Alf Garnett. It wasn't that bad. You know, but they were staunch conservatives. The only reason they voted Democratic is because they always told me that they knew Republicans would never help a working man ever, ever. And they would never give their votes to Republicans based on that alone. And, you know, and you have to remember, too, that the Democratic Party was racist as hell until Kennedy. Kennedy caused the split. And then when Johnson went ahead with the Civil Rights Bill and followed through with that, not because he wanted to, because that's on record now, too. He did it because things in the streets were just a little too tough. And white folks were saying, put a stop to it, give them what the hell they want, put an end to it. And he went ahead and he pushed it through. So, you know, the Democrats who didn't like that went to the Republican Party. You dig? And the true Republicans went to the Democratic Party. And any Republican that would tell you that I'm telling you something that's wrong is a liar. They're either too young to remember what the hell happened, or they don't do their goddamn research. And you need to do your goddamn research. Look up, for example, the Senator Frank Church hearings, which you can find. I mean, you can go to George Washington University site. You can find all of this and see what the hell came out. in terms of, you know, COINTELPRO and everything that we're complaining about now with CIFA and CISPA and all these goddamn acronyms about these things that are totally ugly, but we don't want to call them by their rightful names. Like, we don't want to say racism in the United States. But now Navi Pillai over at the United Nations, and thank you, sister, for this. Finally, somebody's standing up for the black man and woman in the United States and decided that the Trayvon Martin case should be an international incident. And she's calling for United Nations official investigation. And now you have, finally, the United Nations investigating how our brothers and sisters are being treated here in North America. Now, they're particularly looking at the United States. But, you know, I would hope that they would look at Vancouver. I would hope they would look at Montreal. You know, I would hope that they would look at these areas. And I would hope that they would look at Nunavut and see what the hell is happening up there, too. You know. And like I said, and while you're at it, look at Mexico and see what the hell is happening, where we're looking at Walmart is bribing everybody left and right, which we know they had to have done in Africa, but they're bribing everybody left and right to put up their goddamn, you know, I don't know, what do you call them? What do you call them? They're ugly boxes, and I hate to say this, no offense, you know, I don't go to Walmart anymore, I just, you know, I did for a while, because I kind of had no choice, right? You know, you don't have any money, which is where they get you. So you have no choice. You go to Walmart. And you know that all of this crap hold, and it's all ugly, and the clothes for men are totally... No. You know, I mean, I'm not into fashion, but no. 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 You know, I mean, this idea that people... who are political shouldn't have any kind of fashion sense is ludicrous. No. I mean, I thrift because, you know, I thrift. It is what it is. I'm not ashamed of it. And I look better than half of these Republican cats that want to argue with me on the street. You know, I mean, they're sloppy. The skin looks bad. You know, they don't know how to do anything with the hair. They don't know how, you know, this. No, man. And that's why it's hard for me to be intimidated by somebody like that, you know, who's first ignorant. And then when you really start talking to these people, you realize that they're scared of everything. They're scared of black people. They're totally scared of women. White Republican men in the United States are completely terrified of women. They are completely living in fear of women because they can't control their need of them. See, you know, as an Indian man, as an African man, you know, is it, you know, a traditionally thinking color man, you know, it's like women are beautiful things, man, to be cherished. You dig what I'm saying? You know, you want to share life with your woman, man. You want to share life with your mother. You dig what I'm saying? You want to get that wisdom from your grandma, right? You got your aunts, and you know, the women around us make us men. And here it is, you have these white guys who talk about Jesus all the time, and the religious ones, like these, you know, I'm not even talking about this this Pope here, which, you know, actually, the hell with that. You know, we all know Republicans are stupid when it comes to women. I want to mention before we go here, Gunter Grass. I'm going to have an editorial about it at some point when I get a chance to finish it. But, you know, I don't like the fact of how he's been slapped around here. And, you know, the fact that he's now persona non grata in Israel. Well, I mean, really, that's becoming a badge of honor, frankly. You know, I mean, when people insult me and they actually list me, you know, which is ridiculous, calling me an anti-Semite. I'm married to one, you know, and my, you know, I am, you know, if you want to get into blood quantum when it comes to the Jewish community, I mean, how much do you need to be a Jew these days? You know, probably not much if you're willing to go by the Zionist program, at least as it's being outlined today by the Likudniks. But, you know, it doesn't matter, right? You will never prove a negative to someone who simply doesn't want to accept reality. And we're talking about conservatives in the United States, in the UK, and in Canada, and Mexico, for that matter, who reject science. And the Caribbean, too, let's be honest. They reject science. Everything is the Bible. Everything is religion. And they know nothing about the Bible. They know nothing about their own religion. And what's worse, brother and sister? What's worse, brother and sister? What's worse, brother and sister? They can't prove any of it. and people have died and wars have been fought and folks are being abused in the name of a God that doesn't exist. And I'm sorry if you're offended by that, you know, I'm an atheist. It is what it is. If you can prove to me beyond the shadow of a doubt, materially prove to me, empirically prove to me that these things go, then I'll take you seriously. But right now, no. If you want to talk about ancestor worship, I'm down with you. You want to talk about burning candles to your relations and maybe to heal you, to put you in a positive frame, I'm down with you. If you say that you're a Christian and, you know, you do good works and you know, you try to follow that teaching, that's fine, man. I'm down with you. You say you're a Muslim? Cool, brother. If you're really a practicing Jew, fine. I'll hang out with you at your next Seder. But, you know, do not push this nonsense on me that the law has to be set up to honor something that does not fucking exist. And what's happening in Africa is religious goddamn mayhem brought about by the capitalists to completely ruin that continent. To put the black man and woman in such a position, they will never be able to get on their feet ever again. That was the whole point behind Ebola. That was the whole point behind AIDS. Look for the film, The Origin of AIDS. Read the book, The River. Find out what the hell happened. You know, doing these clinical trials with the World Health Organization and when they were going for polio. You know, check out, do the research. Don't believe me. You know, I mean, if it doesn't seem right to you, then obviously something is wrong. But you have to look at the evidence. You have to be willing to look at these things and be willing to accept some ugly truths about your country. I'm sorry. And about your culture. I'm sorry. But that's what it is. That's what you're going to have to do. If you're really serious about justice, if you're really serious about, you know, things being right and good for everybody, you're going to have to at some point accept the fact that this is a crummy goddamn society and always has been for people who were not white and were not male and were not Christian. And it is still that goddamn way. You know, because we can talk about slavery all day long and the antebellum period, and we can talk about Reconstruction. But, you know, almost nobody talks about what happened to Jews during Reconstruction and how many Jews were harmed by the Klan. You see, nobody wants to talk about that. Even Jews in this country don't want to talk about that. I mean, Eric Cantor, evidently something happened. You know, because we all know that basically he really needs to quit his seat and go live in Israel. Because I'm really tired of him and Joe Lieberman and the rest of these Likudnik, you know, U.S. congressmen and senators and what have you, who will spend more time arguing for Israel. They're getting even more money now for this quote-unquote Iron Dome thing. When we got people here living in their cars. But they're sending more money to Israel? To do what? More like they did on the high seas of the Marvel? To you know, go against their own goddamn agreements and keep building these fucking settlements? Are you kidding me? No, sorry. Gunther Grass was completely in his rights. Completely in his rights to say what he said. And for everybody that wants to get on him for being a ex-Nazi, especially my Catholic brothers and sisters out of there, you know, my Catholic brothers and sisters out here, well, you need to look at your Pope. You need to really take a good peep at your Pope. Check out your Pope. Ratzinger was Nazi youth at a later age than Gunther Grass was. Gunther Grass went in, you know, as a teen. If I understand correctly, Ratzinger went in as a grown man. So, you know, you make your decisions. And then after he got out, Gunther Grass became a leftist, went against everything that the Nazis were about. I mean, he's actually redeemed the left with this poem of his. Whether people want to accept that or not is immaterial. He has redeemed the left with this, that it is possible to give an analysis regardless of whether or not somebody's feelings gets hurt. And when I say, when I'm talking about that, I'm talking about the feelings of the goddamn perpetrator. The hell with the perpetrator's feeling. He called it as he saw it. And he is in his rights to do so. He was a goddamn Nazi, so he knows. He is a German. He knows. He watched the country be split in half. He knows. And he watched how these goddamn neo-Nazis came over from the East. He knows what he's talking about. So anybody in the Israeli press that's got anything negative to say about Gunter Grass really needs to look in the mirror. You know, I mean, for real. And take a good look at Zev Yabotinsky's The Iron Wall. Reread it. Especially my native brothers and sisters. Read The Iron Wall by Yabotinsky. I believe it was 1923. Because we're mentioned, you know, in connection with Palestinians. We're mentioned. He didn't mention anybody else. And actually, he mentioned us twice. So, that's it for today. But, you know, I get tired of the hypocrisy. You know, if you're going to get on Gunter Grass and tell the truth, you know, and you have people here who tell complete goddamn lies, Gingrich is a liar. You know, now he wants to go to the UN with some complete nonsense. He's a liar. Ted Nugent is a liar. And he's a bathtub. Ted Nugent is full of it. But he gets praised. For what? No, brothers. I mean, come on. Michelle Bachmann, Palin. Yeah, I mean, there's a GOP representative or Congress, whatever the hell, you know. He has no clue that the GOP is doing anything negative towards women. She says she doesn't know what anybody's talking about. I mean, you want to be led by fools like this? You know, obviously, you do. You know, you either want one of the serious pro-capitalist fools like Ron Paul, who just wants to deregulate everything, allow everybody to walk around with a sidearm, to basically be a Zimmerman. Because this is what is printed in the Ron Paul newsletter. Don't believe me. Look it up. And anybody who tells you that all of it's been discredited is a liar. Just because they say, oh, it's not credible, doesn't mean that it's discredited. That's a lie. You know, this is somebody who wants to run for president but can't take responsibility for a publication bearing his name, of which he was the editor-in-chief and of which he made $1 million from. He owned it lock, stock, and bloody barrel. And, no. See, you know, white folks really want people, black folks especially, to believe that folks are stupid. You know, I mean, they're making connections with Obama between all kinds of people, right? You know, I mean, connections that don't exist. You know, and then his real connections to the financial community, nobody looked at that. Right? You know, and nobody says much about the fact that he wins the Nobel Peace Prize, but he's expanded this colonialist war of choice. So, yeah, no. I don't have time for nonsense, and I would hope if you had any kind of a moral center and any kind of light in your mind that, you know, tells you, yes, I exist, a Descartesian, awakening, you know, yes, I'm here, you know, I have solid being, you know, arm, leg, you know what I'm saying, leg, right? See, I don't want to give too much because 85s would just collapse. You know, we're born. You know, I'm not going to go any further than that because you need to do your research. It's out there. It's out there. But, you know, you're really waiting for Mr. Charlie to bring it to you. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So, you know, special thanks again to all of our Aboriginal and African students who are smart enough to stay in school, stay off drugs, and stay clear of the gang activity that's become such a goddamn problem in Aboriginal communities all over the world. I mean, how many old gangsters do you really see? How many old pimps do you really see? You know, think about that. And if you do see any, I mean, what kind of condition are they in? How are they living? You know, that's not what we were born to do. I know some of you think that's all there is out there, but no. No, you know, that's my main criticism of this whole hip-hop, ghetto, fabulous universe. All you're doing is making a circular argument for your own self-destruction. So, you know, walk off the self-colonialism circuit and get with the rest of us. You know, get the intellectual and technical knowledge to change the dominant colonialist paradigm. You know, retain self-knowledge of who you really are. Then, you come back and you help your people and others who need your help. You know, it's about becoming a complete human being instead of a cog for the capitalist machine. Reporting from Occupied North America to the International Aboriginal Community for the Aboriginal Press News Service, this is Angry Indian reminding you that if you want the man to get up off your back, all you've got to do is stand up. Power to the people. Sig it.
Percentage of them. I'd say, well, you can't have a poll tax. They'd say you can't have a gas tax or a cigarette tax or anything else. Federal government's telling states that pretty tough what their business is. Now, you can say that they can't discriminate, but I've got to prove that it discriminates, and I can't prove in Texas that more niggers vote there than there are white folks. And more of them buying poll taxes than there are white folks. Higher percentage of them. And I can't show that the literacy test is discriminated against because they haven't got any. They got no test at all. Just by God, anybody that can get up and pay $1.06 can vote.
Don't let the colonial occupation blues get you down. Listen to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Oh, the podcast for Intelligent Aboriginals.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, Native women made all decisions regarding their reproductive health care. This was respected as women's business. Today, we are basically denied this decision-making power. It's time to take back that power making decisions concerning our reproductive health. There is a choice we can make regarding unwanted pregnancy. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that must be taken within 72 hours after having unprotected sexual intercourse in order for it to be effective in preventing pregnancy. Contact your local Indian Health Service facility and ask if they carry Plan B. If not, tell them to order it. Plan B is an OTC, over-the-counter contraceptive, and a prescription is not necessary. You have a legal right to access this contraceptive over-the-counter. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
This is Howard Zinn. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced false news reports, imprisoned without charge, and tortured, targeted civilians, and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Hello, I am Susan Aglukkaq. The North has the highest incidence of sexually transmitted diseases, STDs, in the country. We also have a high rate of teenage pregnancies. High-risk behaviors, unprotected sex, lead to the spread of HIV/AIDS. It can be prevented. Learn the ways to protect yourself and others. Knowledge is power.
The definition that they utilize for a political prisoner is a person who has made a moral and political commitment to the liberation struggles of their particular people, and who, as a consequence of that struggle, has been placed in prison or had been targeted for repression by various governmental agencies.
Let me press you a little bit more. Are these individuals incarcerated because they've been found guilty of being involved in the struggle of which they may be involved in, or is there a pretense?
Well, it's very interesting that you ask that, because the United States government does not admit to having political prisoners. The United States government, of course, takes the position that everyone in prison is in prison as a consequence of committing a crime. But what the United States government does not say is that it has had a conscious policy of criminalizing movements, legitimate political movements, and of repressing the activists of these political movements under the guise of criminal law enforcement. So it's a pretext that the United States government employs in order to place people in prison as a consequence of their political activism. I think that if we go back to one of the founding documents of the counterintelligence program, known as COINTELPRO, our former FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover made it clear that one of the objectives of the counterintelligence program was to prevent the black nationalist movement and the black movement for liberation in the U.S. from acquiring any type of legitimacy. And toward that end, the FBI targeted certain individuals and organizations for neutralization.
How would the public work this out in their own mind? If somebody is found guilty of committing a crime, they're tried and convicted and sent to prison. Now, if that person then says, I'm behind bars not for the crime of which I've been, but because of my political conviction, how is a person, John Q. Public, for lack of a better word, supposed to cut through that and discern what is really going on?
Well, I think that simply, a person simply claiming that they're a political prisoner, in my view, does not qualify them for that status. We have to understand that the reason why, and this gets back to the U.S., the United States government's posture abroad, the reason why the United States doesn't admit to political prisoners is not because it's concerned about international opinion or concerned about censorship. censorship in the international community. The reason why the government does not admit, U.S. government does not admit to political prisoners is because to do so would clearly show that national minorities, especially people of color, who have struggled for empowerment, cannot begin to struggle for empowerment through the means that's available to them in terms of the body politic, in terms of the status quo. And as a consequence, they have engaged in activities that the United States government has defined as illegal on certain levels. On another level, it will also admit that the United States government carries out a program of repression of movements that are based in the grassroots and that are militant movements. So when we try to analyze and come to the conclusion as to who are political prisoners and who aren't, we can best do so by dealing with the movements themselves.
So let me run this again just to make sure that I understand you correctly. If somebody is convicted and imprisoned for stealing a loaf of bread, if that person was involved in some political movement, then you're saying that one could conclude that the conviction for the stealing of the loaf of bread is the pretext, and the real reason that they're being convicted is because of the movement that they've been involved in.
Well, I think I should answer that in two parts. The first part is when you say stealing a loaf of bread, this automatically...
I know you're using it as an analogy.
Yes. I understand that. But I think it's very important to say this because a lot of people would say that, well, so what you're saying is that any criminal who goes to prison, all he or she has to claim is to have been involved at some time or other in a political movement, and that makes him a political prisoner.
Really?
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that in the United States, for instance, we know in the case of black people that everything that happens to us in this society is political in the final analysis.
Really?
Our failure to have political power translates itself in many ways. It translates itself in the economic arena. It translates itself in the social arena. And so therefore, there are certain social characteristics of our experience in the United States that lend us or target us for a particular type of treatment by certain institutions. But it doesn't necessarily follow that an individual is not responsible for their own actions. So a person who goes to prison, for instance, for just a common murder, or for stealing and thievery, is not a political prisoner, as in the definition that I first enunciated. However, that person can be said, and when we look at the statistics in New York State, for instance, over 85% of the prisoners in New York State come from only six communities in the state of New York, and those six communities are black and Latino communities. And when we look at the rate of imprisonment for black males versus the rate of imprisonment for white males involved in the same type of activities, we see a threefold difference in terms of black people. When we look at these social aspects, we have to say that these are the consequence of a political situation. And in a sense, there are social prisoners in the United States, the majority of which are victims of political powerlessness. But they are not political prisoners in the definition that I gave. In the definition that I gave, an individual may be framed up on a seemingly criminal act in order to imprison that individual and remove that individual from the movement in which they are a part.
I guess the reason I ask you these pointed questions is because so many people in the public get in touch with us, and they voice genuine concern about individuals who claim that they are political prisoners, yet courts have found them guilty of having committed a specific crime. And they ask, are we supposed to be able to cut through and differentiate between the political atmosphere of which they speak and the specifics of the crime for which they've been convicted?
Well, I think, Gil, it's very important to understand that at one time in the history of the United States, it was a crime for a slave to flee the jurisdiction of their slave master. That the system of law in this country is a racist system of law, that has been utilized to keep black people and people of color and poor people in their place. And that when it's ever convenient for the status quo and for the ruling circles in this country to employ the law in terms of repressing legitimate concerns, they will do so. And I think that for a person to ask about the particulars of a particular crime, rather than to ask whether the movement from which this individual comes from has certified that they are political prisoner, is in essence to buy into the notion that the legal system is somehow objective and somehow devoid of class and racial interest. It is not.
How is one then supposed to deal with the specifics of the crime that are being charged against the person if one takes into consideration the movement and the sociology of which you speak? How then does one deal with the specifics of the crime?
If it is legitimate for an oppressed people to resist their oppression through means of armed struggle, then how can the oppressor nation, or how can an exploitive nation then take these individuals through their criminal justice process and criminalize their movement? This is the reason why the United Nations Charter on Human Rights makes special provisions for people who struggle against colonial domination. Because left to the colonial power, everyone that struggles to overthrow it is a criminal. And in the United States, by definition, John Brown was a criminal. By definition, Denmark Vesey was a criminal. By definition, according to their own constitution, George Washington was a criminal.
Nothing British is a campaign against racism and extremism. Add your voice by signing our petition at www.nothingbritish.com.
You can't bring up, one guy sent me a very interesting thing about Barack Obama and race. You can't bring up anything other than that suddenly he's African American. If you start to, you know, delve around the edges of, wait a minute, isn't he mixed race? Weren't we told that last year? Whatever, biracial? Not allowed to say that anymore. Apparently, the mainstream media has dubbed him to be African-American.
Yeah, I was driving in today, and I was seeing, because I saw this the piece with him on 60 Minutes, and I thought to myself, he's very white in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, gee, can I even say that? Can I even say that without somebody else starting a campaign saying, what does he mean he's very white? He is. He's very white.
When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck, it's What's for Demagogue.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
My name is Gordon Hill. I'm from the Kwakwaka'wakw Nation in northwest coast of so-called British Columbia, Canada, and you're listening to Radio Intelligent Indigenous.
Joining us right now on the line is a guest that's going to give us an update on what's been happening with the Mohawk Nation news, as well as her personal story of being attacked at the Akwesasne, Canada-U.S. border on June 2008. And I'd like to welcome to the show today, Cantonitha Horn. Hi, Cantonitha.
Hi.
Thanks. Welcome. Thanks for returning to the show.
Oh, glad to be here. I hear that you might not be around for long, or has that changed?
No. Well, right now, what's going on is we're hoping for an appeal on the decision, but it looks like the CRTC has made the decision that the 12th of February is when we're supposed to lose our license. So they've given us a date. So on the 13th of February, nobody knows. Yeah, what's going to happen?
Well, you know, I guess media is getting your story out on the media is probably very dangerous for the government, because in my case, there was never anything in the media about what happened to me, and it's really a very big story.
I know, and that's why I'm glad that I was able to find one article on it, and I guess it's fitting that the article is listed on the website Censored News, because
that's right.
Yeah, because it's like your story is pretty much been censored. Could you give us an update? What has happened?
Well, they tried to censor me completely from the earth, I guess. Well, it happened. Well, what happened? I guess you've already given some background about it. But I we went to the border. Me and two other people. We drove to the Abrazaste border and drove up to the Canada CBSA. That's the Canada border agents. And they pulled us over. And there was nothing on me at all, and nothing as far as I knew on any of my passengers. But there was a female passenger, and they wanted her to get out. They said that she had an outstanding warrant, which I didn't know about. And so she was reluctant to get out. And they pulled her out, they pushed her to the ground, they handcuffed her, and took her away. And I saw this, and I really, really got scared, because they really didn't have any reason to stop me. And they all came swarming around me. There was about 14 of them. And one was giving the orders on through a cell phone. He was getting orders from somewhere and telling them to come around and to pull me out. And I argued with him. I said, I haven't done anything wrong. And I don't have any outstanding charges or contraband or anything. And they couldn't give me a reason for pulling me out except saying that for me to get out. And I didn't want to be mistreated. And the others, she had been mistreated. And they weren't giving me any guarantees. I said, what are you going to do to me? And they said that wasn't for them to say to me. So anyways, and then I didn't have any witnesses around. I was really scared. Very large males, and there were two females. They came around, and when they did that, I said, uh-oh, there's a lot of trouble for me here. And they pounced on me, and then they started pulling me out with they pulled my left arm, and they tried to break my arm. They twisted it, and it felt like they were trying to break it, and it was really painful. So I was screaming and hollering and saying, let go, let go. And I tried to pull my arm away. And I thought, well, there's something wrong here. I think they're after me more than they are after that passenger. So, because they certainly knew who I was, they had already looked through all my papers, and we had waited for a whole hour while they checked and verified everything. And then there was nobody around at that time, but after an hour, this big swarm of commandos came around. And that's when I said I'd been beaten up before by the police. And there have been a few attempts on my life, once in 1990 and once in 1995, and then again this time in 2008. So they finally got me out, and they handcuffed me, and they took me inside and put me in a cell. They roughed me up, and they kept on tightening the cuffs. The handcuffs, and then my hands were getting redder and redder. There was no blood circulation, and they were behind. It was behind my back, and they kept lifting my arms up so that it would hurt me, and it was hurting me. And I kept telling them to stop and to loosen the cuffs, and but they seemed to know what they were doing. And then inside the cell, one of the officers stood behind me and one stood in front of me. And the one behind me had his hands on my pants and trying to pull it down. And the woman in front of me was trying to pull my head down between her crotch area. So I felt like something serious was going to happen here. And I felt like I was that there was going to be a sexual assault happening to me. That's when I began having the heart attack. And then my brother came in at that time and stopped it. But they also had with them a taser. So they were going to do something to me. The taser, they didn't use it, but they had it with them. And I guess everybody knows what a taser is. And a person of my age could be killed, you know, if you get all those electrical volts, it could kill you. So I don't know whether the stress hold that they were using on me was what they were thinking was going to finish me off. But anyway, so that's what happened. And I didn't bring that up about what they did to me in the cell, because I was afraid that if I said anything about that at this time, you know, before I finalized and got my charges and everything else out of that court system, and I became, you know, gave me an absolute discharge. I think that had I mentioned anything of that to anybody, that would have been a reason to, I don't know,
right,
cut me up or tell everybody I'm a nut or whatever. I was afraid anyway. I was scared.
So when you mentioned that your brother helped you get out of the cell, is that because I think I saw it in the article, was your brother able to get access because he's a lawyer? Is that
yeah?
Right.
Well, he came in. He says that's my sister, but then they wouldn't let him see me. So he says, well, I'm her lawyer. So then when they took they stopped what they were doing. They took the handcuffs off, and then they put me on a chair. They sat me down. By then, then he could see that I was in serious trouble. He said, "Well, he could see that my eyes were glazed and my voice and my face was getting flushed, and I was breathing. You know, breathing was hard. He knew that I was in very serious trouble, so he's the one that called for an ambulance and got me and rushed me to the hospital. And they told me at the hospital I'd had a heart attack.
Now, this is a shocking thing with this whole story about what you went through, and then to have the CVSA or the Border Commandos charge you with assault. That's where it seems, you know, that's the crazy part in this, it seems to me. And then, you know, if this is 2 years ago or, you know, getting closer to 3 years ago, I guess it seems like the justice system is moving slower. And then what happened on your court case at the end of January? I know you mentioned that the charges were discharged, but I guess how did it all happen?
Well, what they did was that if I pleaded guilty, then they would drop the assault charges and they would give me an absolute discharge on the obstruction charge. See, they said that I had obstructed the officers, but they said I also had assaulted them. Now I had there's a list of 14 of them that were there. I've got the list and all the names. So I think what it ended up was that if I didn't plead guilty, and then there would have been a trial, and it would have been a very expensive trial. And I, you know, I don't. I'm an elder and a senior citizen, and I get a pension like anybody else. I'm 71 years old, and I couldn't afford to have a trial. Even with the lawyer doing what he did for me, Phil Schneider, he did a good job getting things taken care of. It still cost me a lot of money. I still have to pay it. However, if I had gone to trial, I could never have afforded it. So what happened was that Phil Schneider, the lawyer, and the Crown Attorney agreed that if I pleaded guilty, then the assault charge would be withdrawn. If I pleaded guilty to obstruction. So I was forced to plead guilty to something I didn't do.
Well.
In order to get out of there, to get out of their system.
Well. Yeah, this system's definitely a mess. And this whole, you can find more information on this whole story if you check out the article by Brenda Norrell on No Jail Time for Cantonitha Horn. It was published January 26, 2011 on the Censored News blog. And also on the Censored News blog, I did notice they had a headline, Censored News in January 2011, or more censored news in January 2011 than any other period. So this is what the month we've just gone through, and so much has happened, and it's all, you know, a lot of it's being censored. That's why I'm glad we're able to get some of your story out, and that's why I'd also recommend people check out another article, Cantonitha Horn Resistance, that is on the same blog, bsnorrell.blogspot.com, or the Censored News blog. And in that, it also links to an interview you did on Hidden from History Radio with Kevin Annett. And then it also links to a movie from 1969, You Are on Indian Land, by Mort Ranson. It's a National Film Board documentary that you can watch online. And this documentary from 69 was interesting because I watched it, and this situation at the border is an old issue.
Yes.
But, you know, it seems like they've got their high-tech gear. You know, the commandos are a bit more high-tech, but it's still this. I guess, yeah, do you have any words on this, on the You Are on Indian Land? And
well, yes, that was when we blocked that border crossing, and it was in 1968, and there were 60 of us that were put in jail, but there was about 500 people there, and it was cold, December 20th, I think, and anyway, I ended up going to trial, the only one. And at that time, I was charged with beating up 23 Cornwall policemen, City of Cornwall policemen. And, you know, I'm not that big a person. although the border guard described me as being a large, strong 55-year-old woman. I'm not like that at all. And but it, at that time, and that movie, you know, has been on the net. It's always played in Agusasne, and Mohawk people always see it over throughout the years. So I guess my face is still in the forefront of resistance at the border. So when I was coming through 40 years later, I guess, I don't know whether they recognized me or the name, but I go through there because that border crossing is right in the middle of the community of Agusasne, and I have a lot of relatives there, and I visited there often. But since that time, what's happened is that border crossing has been moved right off of Cornwall Island. It's now over in the City of Cornwall.
Whoa.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I almost died at that border. So, you know, I don't know whether, but anyway, what happened it was very serious. But I did take an action, and I wanted that assault inside the customs house to be investigated. So I wrote a report on it, and I sent it to the RCMP and the OPP and also the Mohawk police and the Attorney General of Canada. I said, this is a very serious assault. And they would not, they absolutely would not investigate it. So I ended up, I went to the Federal Court of Canada. And for $2, I took an action in the federal court. Anyway, they have timelines they have to follow. So I end up getting this order, court order, from the federal court, saying that if I want this assault investigated, I would have to pay all of the Crown's costs. And they wanted me to put on deposit $25,000 just to start in order to have this assault investigated. And do you know what the reason was that they gave?
No, what?
They said that because I live in Ganawage, which is a Mohawk community, I am not a resident of Canada.
Oh.
That was the order. That was the order that was made.
Well, what?
So what do you think that means?
That means that you're...
That we're sovereign.
Yeah, exactly. That they haven't...
That's what it means. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And you know, I've tried to... what I did was I appealed, and then they issued that order again. Actually, they issued that order a few times to three different federal court judges, that because I live in Ganawage, I'm therefore not a resident of Canada. So that means that principle applies to every Indigenous person. Isn't that something?
Yeah. Definitely is. It definitely is, and that's something.
That's an amazing. They had to say that. They knew I didn't have that kind of money to pay for the Crown's cost, which would have been who knows how much. It started out at $25,000 just to get them to answer. The first filing that I did. That's what it cost them. And then after that, I would have had to pay for everything. Who can afford that? And is that... I've never heard of that. Have you?
No. No. But this is... Yeah, this is... It's... It seems too much with what you've gone through, and then, you know, to expect you to have this kind of money. This is not... Doesn't seem right. And for more information, if anyone wants more information on all of this, you can check out mohawknationnews.com, and that's how you can also help Cantinth out on that site too. Check out mohawknationnews.com. and Cantinth the Horn, I really hope that this isn't the last time that you're on Word of Mouth Wednesday. I hope the show can continue, but with what's gone on with the CRTC, I really don't know. But I just wanted to thank you again, because your reports on mohawknationnews.com have been some of our most used and best resources. And you actually introduced me, or your words introduced me to like names like Kevin Annett and Russell Means and Splitting the Sky, all people we've had on the show. Teo Kitote we actually had on a few weeks ago. I just wanted to mention, even the very first interview I ever did on Word of Mouth Wednesday was based on a Mohawk Nation News article, and that was when I interviewed Bob Lovelace about the Charbot Lake situation. And when I followed that was in 2007, and then when I kept following it on Mohawk Nation News, I basically, from that whole experience, I'm skeptical of everything now, and that's why...
I hope you are.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'd like to thank you, for waking us up.
Well, you have to stay on, and I think because it's important, because the knowledge that you put out is going to rule ignorance. knowledge is what makes everybody equal. If you have the knowledge, I have the knowledge, and the people who are listening have the knowledge, then that's what I call democracy. That comes right from the Guyana-Gore, the great loss. So the way that the state and the corporations are keeping their power is through keeping the knowledge to themselves and keeping it from the people. And when they're giving you that kind of trouble, then that means that they don't want the free flow of knowledge. Because the free flow of knowledge is the free flow of power. That's the equalizer.
Right.
And that's why it's important for you to stay on the air. And I really congratulate you, and I give you all, everything that I, whatever I can do, you know, I hope you do stay on.
All right, thanks
but
a lot.
You have to keep putting knowledge in the hands of the people.
That's what we're trying to do, yeah, and you're speaking the truth, and yeah, thanks a lot, Cantonitha, for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
All right, that's Cantonitha Horn of the Mohawk Nation News. She's the editor and publisher of Mohawk Nation News, mohawknationnews.com. Check out the article, No Jail Time, for Cantonitha Horn. It was from January 26, 2011, by Brenda Norrell. And you can find it on the Censored News Blogspot. Search Censored News in your favorite search engine.
Get the point?
Well, I couldn't have grabbed me, Helen Thomas, and John, and that ball from Newsweek, and somebody
bitch,
right? Some other bitch I've never seen.
Wow.
And they all said, where does this list come from? And I said, this is the middle of America. This is the growth section. This is the new majority. And they were all, how come we don't see many blacks here? And I said, well, by the word black, we've got about five or six, sir. I pointed them out.
You have been listening to Angrindian Radio, angrindianradio.blogspot.com.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.